Our Week That Was guests, Gemma Gracewood and Te Reira. Kia ora both.
Kia ora.
Welcome.
How are you?
I love the first story you've got because I've been following this a little bit. Poor old Coupe, the bar-tailed godwit. He's had a bit of a rough start to this year's migration.
This is my favourite thing that happens on Twitter every year is when the Pū Korokoro Miranda Shorebird Centre sparks up in excitement when that first kuaka, godwit, takes off from Alaska. And it's always a little bit nail-biting, but this year, more than recent years, has been nail-biting than most because poor old Coupe has had to turn back.
It got a long way too, we should say.
Was it about halfway, I think? And they said it showed that the birds were capable of rational decision-making, you know, flying into a storm thinking, I'm not really into this, and going back. There's a movie in here somewhere.
Yeah, there is. For context, Coupe was in the air for 57 hours and 4,200 kilometres before making that rational decision.
Yeah. That's about a third of the way here, isn't it?
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
It's like the kind of Dirty Dozen. You remember the great film? They're all picked off one by one, I think, towards the end. There were 12 godwits that had the transmitters. Only one, they say, and I don't know if this is a euphemism, is still able to send a signal. And that is little Coupe. So whatever happened to the others? But just, you know, what is it? At what point, like, they must have started migrating as maybe the climate change, and the distance just got further and further. And at what point were there, godwits who just went, you know what, I'm not into this. Why do we need to go all the way to Alaska? We could just go to, like, Northland in an hour. You know, what is it about these huge migrations where animals, clearly capable of rational thought by turning back when there's a bit of a storm, don't rationally think it's just too far?
And not just a few of them, like 80,000 shorebirds every year make this epic journey.
I just want to meet the one or two that just go, yeah, nah, and they're still there. They're just wind hunkered down. They're at the hot
pool. I just hope that Coupe, otherwise known as 4BWRB, does eventually make it here. I remember last year it was quite nail-biting because the leader bird, who might have been the same bird actually, got sort of slightly blown off course, was really close, like was a day from getting here, and then got blown off course and just kind of was flying into the wind in a stationary manner for a couple of days and had a bit of a rest on Norfolk Island and then eventually caught up with the rest.
There's not much else to do on Norfolk Island but rest.
I did wonder, though, maybe 4BWRB got 57 hours in and then realised that their MIQ spot voucher hadn't been arranged and needed to go back to the back of the queue.
No matter where she'll be flying the flag, waiting for their return.
We will welcome them
home. Should it have been England, we'll probably not be flying the Jolly Roger flag, which is, I think, Gemma's favourite story of the week. Maria Lambert, she's 62. She lives in Brickland somewhere, wherever that is in the UK. And she's got a couple of flagpoles, one of which she put up a pirate flag. Basically, it's a kid's flag on a bamboo stick. Neighbour complained to the council. Council came in, said, you're going to have to take that down. And then what I loved about that, and then provide photographic evidence that the flag has been removed.
And this poor woman, I mean, she also, by the way, had a Union Jack right next to her Jolly Roger, skull and crossbones. So it's not like she was a total pirate in her own home country. But she's like, it's a kid's flag on a bamboo stick. I'm not taking it down. It's a kid's flag and it's on my property. And anyway, the council backtracked, which is...
Thank goodness.
Apparently they said it was breaching advertising rules. I'm not sure, like... I don't think she was recruiting for pirates. I don't know whether being a pirate is still on the books in the UK. I mean, they did, like, buccaneers. Didn't the buccaneers start off and then they were essentially legitimised state pirates? You know, I don't know the state of the British Navy. Apparently they're going to have some submarines. But, you know, I don't think she was recruiting. But I kind of, in a way, hope she was. It would be nice to think, what am I going to do once we get out of lockdown? I'm going to become a pirate.
Yeah, that could be kind of fun. Hey, look, my heart slightly sank when I saw the story about the toilet train cows. I just couldn't believe that the media, of which I'm a part, got so excited about the moolahs.
This is
but
exciting.
It was everywhere, is it?
Yeah, this is a, like, you know, you can look at all kinds of ways to mitigate nitrogen and various things when someone just goes, well, actually, why don't we just go straight to the source of the source and see if we can't. Cows are very intelligent. I've spent a lot of my life around cows. I love them. Great, strong, matriarchal social structures. And the fact that they, I think, more intelligent than given credit for. And
it turns out they're eminently trainable as long as you get
eminently
them treats.
Trainable. Well, and they are very much creatures of routine and habit, and so you give them, and they, like children, you give them a treat and they can very quickly be toilet trained. So even if you can reduce, they say, by 10 or 20%, so every couple of times they, you know, urinate, they stroll off to the kind of whatever facility is installed. I don't know if it's like I saw it
on the telly. It's brilliant. It's yeah. It's like it's basically a pen. Get in the pen, and it's got two gates. One goes one way, the other goes the other way, and it's easy for a cow to push.
Cows love gates. Yeah.
So once they're in, they're sort of in, and then it just had a square of artificial grass, and off they went, and it just kind of leaches off the side and into a catchment area and not into the rivers.
I feel sorry for this. I mean, the calves are being trained to hold urination, and I can say, as a human being, that's not the most fun thing in the world to have to do. Look, mobile phones covered
I'll do it if there's a treat in store. Yes.
Or a collar that vibrates. Mobile phones, something else to worry about.
Speaking of urine and all other things that get onto our various daily appliances, I mean, who hasn't taken their mobile phone into the restroom with them? But it turns out that, I mean, we probably knew this, but our phones are filthy. They're disgusting. They're filthy. They're crawling with microbiomes. And Dr. Lottie Tajuri, who's an associate professor of molecular biology, looked into this when she was in a situation where there was an emergency. Her wife was pregnant. Her little girl was in breach. There was a C-section called for. And she looked up and noticed that there were all these healthcare workers walking around with their mobile phones inside this extremely, you know, sanitary operating room. And she thought, I know how dirty those things are. I don't like this at all. So she looked into it.
And no shortage. Like, I would have expected a bit of E. coli or whatnot, but I think there was listeria, there were parasites. And the nicest thing I think about this, someone the other day was complaining their phone was out of batteries and they couldn't take it to the toilet. And they said, what is this, the 90s? Think about it all the time. Don't take your phone to the toilet. Just enjoy the tranquility and the solitude. Exactly. Imagine you're a cow.
There you go. Hey, you'll like this. A listener texted to say Sardinia celebrates pirates in their history. They have pirates on their national flag. How cool is that? I didn't know that. We've got a minute to go, and I do
want
to
talk. Yes. No, I just wanted to remind you that it's not only Suffrage Day this weekend, but it's also International Talk Like a Pirate Day.
Oh, great.
And I think we should all speak in te reo with a pirate's voice this weekend.
With a pirate accent. Good for the R's.
Quite the challenge. Hey, we've got a minute, and I just thought this is just something else to frustrate people, I imagine, but how some of the wealthiest families in lockdown are managing to dine like royalty. Sorry, Auckland.
$555 lobster boxes. What do you get? You get one rock lobster, 12 freshly shucked oysters, 8 peeled king prawns, 7, a mud crab. That was where I went, what? And some bread, $550, or $150 for a roast chicken. How the other
half
lives.
Can't afford that. $140 for a pav with passion fruit curd and berries. And that's how the other half are quarantining in Sydney.
Yes, yeah. When I first read that, I thought it was America, but no, it is Sydney. Yeah. Doing a fine trade.
Extraordinary.
I can't even get my chicken delivered. It's still 10 days past its delivery date. I just know it's out there somewhere, just sitting in the back of a courier van.
Oh, you're worried about your chicken last year, Tereza.
I am. I'm still worried. I'm still worried about the chicken. It's more I'm worried about the courier. And when it turns up, it's gone from actually being chicken to some kind of boil in the bag broth.
Oh, stopping now. It's lunchtime. Enough. Thank you very much. We welcome back Coupe. Thank you. That's Gemma Greenswood and Tereza.